I go back to the Akedah. Akedat Yitzchak is the central theme of the Tfilot of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. It is a central theme in the Slichot that we began to say last Motzoi Shabbos. For the fact is that it is a central theme in Yahadut. And here it is, there's the parashah of the Akedah, which is going to be read on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Most probably one can study and study and never really fully plumb the depths of the Akedah. Great thinkers, Talmidei Chachamim, philosophers of all generations, everybody has dealt with the Akedah. Artists, musicians, if I'm not mistaken, I did see Rembrandt's The Akedah, which is awesome. I may be making a mistake, but what's the difference? Who'll catch me? I think it's in the Hermitage in St. Petersburg. But when I was there, it was Leningrad, and they were following me. That was in the old days, it was 83. Awesome. Awesome piece of art. Akedah, central theme. Powerful. In all of our prayers, Zchut Akedat Yitzchak, and just watch the davening. Just watch the davening. Beginning with Tzom Gedalia next week, the Slichot at the end of every Slicha. I didn't write it down, I should have brought it with me, but I think I remember. There is a special Slicha every day called Akedah. And then there's one where I came across a sentence that says, I'm making it up, I know one word I remember, Garesh Lanu Lechabel, remove from us the terrorist.
Wow.
The Slicha, of course, the Mechabel, the great Mechabel, is the Sahara, the Sultan. But you know what? We have more problems with a flesh and blood mechabel. Remove the mechabel. Anyway, I personally believe that the most awesome treatment of Akedat Yitzchak is that of our Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kuk. Last year, I believe, ended with the Tekat Shofar Gadol L'Cheiruchenu. I came in the middle of what Rabbi Yadol was saying. We know that that great part of Rav Kook. So here the whole shir is going to be on Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kook's approach to the Akedah, and it's something that appears in his Perush on the Siddur, Olat Re'iyah, and it's different than all the others. Radically different than every other approach. Because what he does is, he's going to take us by the hand, and he is going to lead us step by step through the Akedah together with Avraham, so that we should experience and we should feel as though we are going through the Akedah together with him. He takes us into the inner workings of the mind and the heart of Avraham Avinu as it is expressed in the Pesukim. You just have to be able to take a closer and deeper look at the Pesukim. Before we begin with that, a number of words that are very significant about the external structure of the Akedah. Now, you know, we don't usually pay much attention to it, but it's so incredible, it's amazing. There is a structure to the Akedah. Let's call it the divine art of biblical narrative that is so unusual and so exceptional. And this external form of the Akedah bears the most eloquent testimony of the inner order and significance of the Akedah. Now that, of course, you didn't understand what I was talking about, in a moment you'll understand. You have the Akedah. the Akedah's chapter 19 in Sefer Bereishit. And the fact is, the parasha of the Akedah is 19 psukim, from Aleph to Yud-Tet. I have also added the next few psukim of the Pasuk of Chalit, which seems to be separate and distinct. After the Akedah is all over, and it came to pass after these things at Maftar down there, by Yugam Avron, Lamer, it was told to Avron, so saying, Hine Yoho Milko Gambi, Donim Lenachor Achicha. Milko has also given birth to children to your brother Nahor, at Utz Bechoro, his firstborn, Utz, and Buz, his brother, and Kimuel, the father of Aram, Bet Kesed, Bet Chazo, Bet Pildash, Bet Gidloch, Bet Betuel. These 8 Yovam Milka Nachar Achi Avram, Nachar Milka gave birth to Nachar, the brother of Avram, Upilakcho, and his concubine, Ushmar Uma, her name is Uma, but he, the Tevach, the Gaham, the Tahas, the Macha. Just a word about, I imagine, when the Torah has this parasha following the most exceptional and outstanding piece of literature ever written, the Akedah. We come, I mean, that this is even worse than a birth announcement in the New York Times. This is like a, I don't know, you're taking that number up so fair. But over there, they certainly not tell you what children were born to the fellow's concubines. And here you said sort of the feeling as though from the very peak of the great passion of our God of you, the great act of Yakedah, wish left all the way down into this list of Uts and Boots and Gakash and Kakash and Diplomat. What's going on? I believe it was the Rav, the Salvation of Seven. I remember hearing it from my brother Oliver Shalom. He told me that following the Akedah, there was a great deal of wagging of tongues in the world. You know, wagging of tongues. You know, what's this big tzimis that this fellow Avram is making about his son Yitzchak? There's a party with a kiddush. It's a 2 or 3 forker. Then there's cholent and herring, and then when he's 2 years old and he's weaned, so then there's another party, another party, another. Now we have the whole Akedah story. What's going on with this Yitzchak? They said, listen, other people also had children. Kachash and Gacham and Machash and Lachash and Butz and Butz. We really have children. What makes such a big sinus of Yitzchak? So that's exactly what the Torah wants to say. There are other people who also have children. But what we put into a Jewish child, as Avraham put into Yitzchak, what emerged from that was an eternal people. And the goods, the goods, and the schmutzes are the ones that went by the wayside of history. They're mentioned now, gone forever. None of them made any impact on anybody, anywhere. Because the difference is, are these children that one looks at and sees their amazing potential? Or is it, look at me, yes, also, we're all this from which nothing comes. And from the one year's hope comes great and eternal. We're going to deal with the 19th psukim. And the first and most significant part of these 19 psukim is the fact that there's such unbelievable, and I'm using all of these words today, I'm going to run out of them quickly. I have used incredible, I've used amazing. What's the one I just used?
Unbelievable.
Okay. I'm going to have to stop repeating right away. The structure, the external structure of the Akedah. is so perfectly balanced. There are nine psukim that lead up to a great moment. Pasuk 10, underlined. Everything is leading up step by step, stage by stage, until Pasuk 10, Vayishlach Avraham et Yado, Avraham stretched out his hand, Vayikach et Hamachelet, and he took the knife, Lishchot Efano, to slaughter his son. That's it. That's the peak. In the next Pasuk, everything begins to wind down, because in the next Pasuk, it's the angel who says to him, Al Tishlach Yochanan, don't do a thing to that child. It means like this. We have a pivotal Pasuk, Pasuk number 10. Nine psukim leading up to the Akedah, nine leading down. The cooling down until Vayeshev Avraham, Vayelchu Yarkov, they both went together to Beersheba, and Avraham lived in Beersheba. Nine psukim on one side, nine psukim on the other, the Akedah in the middle. And we're going to see that each one of the psukim on each side, the nine on one side and the nine on the other side, are really related to one another. We'll see all of that. There's also something very significant about the number nine. The number nine. Biblically, do you know how many sounds of the shofar we have to listen to on Rosh Hashanah? Nine. The Mishnah says, Shalosh, shel shalosh, shalosh. Three times three is nine. In the Torah it says three times truah, and every truah has to have a tekiah before it and a tekiah after it. So the sum total of biblical sounds of the shofar that have to be heard are nine. Tekiah, truah, tekiah. Tekiah, truah, tekiah. Tekiah, truah, tekiah. They become expanded into 100 sounds of the shofar, because we're not certain what's the truah. Is the truah that which we call truah, the nine shorts, the cattle blasts, or is the shofar sound of truah the three shvarim? So then we have to do tekiah, shvarim tekiah, tekiah, truah tekiah. Now we don't know if it's, maybe it's shvarim truah. The Gemara says it couldn't be truah shvarim, because that doesn't fit with the way in which a person cries. It's supposed to be related to crying, and one can begin with the moans of shvarim and then proceed to truah, but doesn't work the other way. So now we already have to do tekiah truah, tekiah tekiah shvarim tekiah, tekiah shvarim truah tekiah. So we're up to 30, and then finally there's a thesis that says that we sound a total of 100 blasts of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Keneged, it corresponds to the 100 groans. Meya payas de paya ima de Sisra. The 100 groans that the mother of Sisra groaned. You know the story of Sisra, a Seyyid Yisrael, a Hitler, a Rav Shimon, who is finally in the great battle where he hopes that he's going to destroy the Jewish people. So in that battle he flees, and Yael is the one who kills him. And Dvorah, in her song, describes how the mother of Sisra is looking out the window, waiting for her son to come home from battle. And she waits, and in the palace they say, there must be a lot of spoil and a lot of booty to be taken today. Wait, he'll come home. And she, according to Chazal, 100 groans. So we do the 100 sounds of shofar. And the Zohar of Soloveitchik once explained that she knew in the depths of her heart that she'd raised a monster. And she knew that the day is going to come. The day is going to come that he's not going to return home. We sound the sounds of the shofar as a reminder that ultimately justice is done in this world. Ultimately, justice is done. And those 100 sounds of the shofar corresponding to the 100 groans of the mother of Sisera are to remind one there's a Chabad Shalom in heaven. It's just that it's not quick enough for us. But there will be justice done. So here we have, essentially, we're getting back to 9 sounds of the shofar. Remember, we had the 9 psukim before the Akedah, the 9 psukim after the Akedah. Then we have the unusual. There is only on Rosh Hashanah, only on Rosh Hashanah, do you have a Shmona Esrei with 9 brachot. Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. Both days, Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. Shmona Esrei usually is 18 plus 1, the 19th. On Shabbos and Yom Tov, it's only 7 brachas. But on Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, we add Malchus, Zechronus, and Shofros, so it becomes a total of 9 brachos. The first day of Rosh Hashanah, we're going to read the first chapter of Sefer Shmuel, and then in the second chapter, the prayer of Hannah. In the prayer of Hannah, she mentions the name of God. Do I have to ask you how many times? Or do you know how many times? 9 times she mentions the name of God. Is this just happens to be so? Wow, what fascinating coincidence. Of course it's not coincidence. Rav Kook says that the number 9, and most probably it's based on the Maral, the number 9 represents the epitome, the peak to which an individual can reach. Because what comes after 9? Oh, Tisha Yarche Leda, that's not bad. 9 months. 9 represents the ultimate that the individual can reach. Because the moment you reach 10, that's Tzibur, that's Klal Yisrael. It is Avraham who reaches the peak of 9. And we are supposed to reach the peak of 9 so that on Rosh Hashanah, as we spoke earlier, we should be able to connect with the Tzibur, Klal Yisrael, which is represented by the number 10. And therefore 10 is the number that you need for a minyan, for Kaddish, for Kedusha, for Kriyas HaTorah. 9 is the highest that the individual can reach. What's significant about the external structure of the Akedah is this external structure testifies that internally, there's something that's taking place that can blow one's mind away. Avraham is the one who is passing the test of the Akedah. Make no mistake, the test of the Akedah is not one single instant in time. It's not that one pasuk 10 when he stretches out his hand in order to slaughter his son. The Akedah is a test, a whole period of 3 days that he's on the way until he gets there. And it doesn't end with that. Avraham isn't simply going to, the Malach has told him, stop. You know what he should do? He should just wipe the sweat off his brow and run from Har HaMoriah. That is not what happens. According to Rav Kook, what's going to happen is all of that great devotion that he develops for HaKadosh Baruch Hu as he reaches that peak. He's going to take all of that power and all of that strength, and he's now going to use it for the Ayol, the Ram. It's not going to go to waste. All of the tremendous emotional and spiritual effort that he invested into the Akedah is not going to be dissipated. It's going to become part of his personality. It's going to become part of the personality of the Jewish people throughout all of history. Because what the Akedah is really telling us is while Yitzchak was not indeed put to death on the Akedah, but Olech HaDor HaMelech says it Olecha horagnu kol hayom. We've been killed because of you every day throughout all history. So that the Akedah that did not happen to Yitzchak is something that we are the victims of throughout all of history. And we do it. And we're ready. We're ready. I don't understand. I've been wondering about it. I've been getting very depressed lately. Maybe I shouldn't depress you. Or maybe I can't depress you any more than you're already depressed. Okay, so I don't know. Why don't we run away? Why don't we run away to a place where buses don't blow up? Why don't we run away? You should tell little baby, Shalala, you turn out the lights in Ben Gurion Airport. This is a tremendous sense of there's a mysterious nefesh. There's a tremendous mysterious nefesh. The Ben Gurion, we're here to stay. And what we have to tell them, Rosh Hashanah, it's your responsibility. If Olecha Horadnu Kol Hayom, if we're being killed because of you, it's time that you must put a stop to the killing. That's exactly what I plan on telling you. By the way, I've told it to him a few times already. Exactly, I think that's what everybody should tell him. God in Himmel, it's enough. It's enough. Maybe we should even call a demonstration of some sort. Dayenu. The outer structure of the Akedah bears, as I say, eloquent testimony for the fact that every step is clearly thought out. And not only every step is clearly thought out, and it's been pointed out at the end of the Shiur last week, that one of the most significant aspects of the Akedah is that it was an act of absolute free will. Not only free will, but that throughout the entire experience that would tax the greatest of people, Avram Avinu is calm. Avram Avinu is thought out. Everything is done not in an act of momentary passion. But no, he's going to go step by step. Let's go. Let's take a look at it now, step by step. Now, on the second side, down at the bottom, there's an olive bed, gimel, dalet, hay. The olive bed, gimel, dalet, hay are the five aspects of Avraham Avinu's religious personality that come to the fore in the course of the Akedah. I hope we'll have time yet to get to the list that I have at the top of the sheet, where we have all 19 psukim divided into categories, where you will be able to see that the first 9 psukim and the second 9 psukim correspond to one another. But let's get into the act of the Akedah itself. Rav Kook says, using a term in the Gemara, there is something called mitzvah kima'amora. Mitzvah kima'amora means a mitzvah that is fulfilled as God gave it. There are different levels of performance of a mitzvah. Good, bad, not so good, better, worse. A mitzvah to perfection is Avraham Avinu's performance of the Akedah. All of the aspects, all of the components that go into making a mitzvah perfect and complete, well, they're in the Akedah. And there are five. The five are simcha. A mitzvah has to be performed, we're going to talk about each one separately. A mitzvah has to be performed with joy. If you may be wondering, how does one perform a mitzvah of this sort with great joy? But a mitzvah that one does because I gotta do it, so I do it, that's obviously not the proper fulfillment of a mitzvah. A mitzvah has to be filled with joy. The proof that it's with joy if it's done with zrizut. Zrizut means that if it's done with agility, with alacrity, efficiently, with speed, not haste, speed, you do it. It's something that you don't want to do. I'll make the phone call later. I'll take out the garbage later. You know. Things you don't want to do are done very slowly. But something that you want to do is done with zrizut. If you really care about the mitzvah, then an extremely significant component of every mitzvah is hidur. It should be done with beauty, with majesty. It should be done like a work of art. And we're going to see how that is going to occur in the Arkeo. The heart of every mitzvah is to make good, that the mitzvah should bring me closer to the Rebbeinu. I should be dovid for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It should be an act of real devotion. And then of course, is mechadesh, that every mitzvah has to have a reshit and an achrit, a beginning and an end. Maybe a very bad example, but the only one I can think of. A fellow I was doing exercise with for a few years always told me, if I'm used to much it, you gotta cool down. Right? You can't just come to a peak over there and not cool down. And I always wanted to run out when it comes time to cool down. So you need. But no. It means that you've reached a certain peak, and now you can't just stop at the peak. You have to slow down. You know, maybe the brakes. You don't put on the brakes in one instant of time. You brake a car slowly. Every mitzvah, says, has to have a reshis leading up to the performance of the mitzvah. The performance itself. And then when it's all over, it's not as though, well, oh, I'm finished with the mitzvah, goodbye. There has to be a winding down, in a sense, where everything that one was able to develop during the course of this mitzvah is going to remain with him for time to come. Let's begin reading. And it came to pass after these things, whatever Kim Nisak of Rahman, God tested Abraham by Yomer Elov, and he said to him, Abraham, by Yomer Hineni, I am here, he says, I am here. Of course, all of the Rafarshim talk about the word Nisa. What do you mean, Nisa? God is testing, doesn't God know how he is going to, perform on the test? So, of course, the Rafarshim say, Ramban and others, the purpose of the test. It's not that God should know. The purpose of the test is that Avram should know the extent to which he is capable of serving God. We never know what we're capable of until we're put into the situation where we have to prove ourselves. And only then do we finally recognize, my, I was able to do that too. And in a sense, what's happening over here is the culmination or the completion of God's first command to Abraham, which was Lech Lecha, Me'aretzecha, Me'avadetcha, Mi'beit Avicha, El Haaretz Asher Araka, Lech Lecha, go unto you, to the land Asher Araka. I once said that the pshat is Araka, it should have said Ani, that I Ar-e-o-cha, I'll show you. Araka means I'm going to show you what you're capable of, Avraham. You don't even know the strengths that you have. You have no idea of what power and what you're capable of. Yes?
There's a significant difference between these two things as the word Hachna and
the Queen. Oh, we're coming to that. Hang in, we're coming to that. Vayomer, and he says, Hachna, et bincha yichidecha, yichidcha, asher ahavta, et yitzcha. The Lech Lecha, the first of Avraham Avinu's 10 tests, started with the word Lech Lecha. And the last of the 10 tests is Lech Lecha. The first of the 10 tests is go to the land that I will show you. The last of the 10 tests is El Eretz HaMoriah, to the land of the Moriah, V'Haleh U'Shom La'olam, bring him there as an Ola, upon one of the mountains that I shall tell you. Just as God didn't tell him the name of the land in the first Lech Lecha, he does not tell him the name of the mountain in the 10th Lech Lecha, the final test. The Gemara says that such is the halacha. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ma'aseh Shinaso, God brings his divine presence to rest only on a person who is in a state of simcha, joy. A Navi cannot be a prophet if he is sad, depressed. Only can be a Navi, one can only be a prophet if he's in a state of simcha. The might, the strength, the power of faith is tested by the extent of one's joy, one's happiness. If you're happy doing it, it means that your faith is strong. But do you know what has to happen over here? If God does not tell him the name of the place, that means what's going to happen during the course of the next 3 days? Every time he comes to a fork in the road, he's going to have to look heavenward in order to receive instructions. Make a left. Make a right. Yes, sir, yes, sir. How can God communicate with him if he's not in a state of simcha? If Avraham Avinu would not have been sameach, happy, the Akedah would have ended at the very beginning as a terrible failure. Mechdal, kishalom, all over. He must maintain, it sounds supernatural, superhuman. Avraham Avinu has to maintain a level of simcha for 3 days, otherwise he's never going to make it there. God is going to appear to him time and time again to tell him, go here, go there. The test of faith is simcha. The Maharal says that real faith brings a person to song. Brings a person to song. Maharal also says to you, Emuna, real faith is simcha. Everything should be done willingly and with great joy. We were talking about the superhuman effort. There have been great Jews who are capable of this. And of course, this is something that we have to strive for. When God appears to him and calls him by his name, Avraham, I don't believe he called him by his name at any one of the other tests. This is an indication to him, Avraham, I'm going to need from you now everything that expresses your inner nature. I want to see Avraham coming to the floor. Yes?
It just occurred to me that Yonah wasn't so happy when God communicated with him. As a matter of fact, he was just the opposite. And how did you do that? And figure that out.
You're asking a good question. That's number one. Number two, it would take me an hour to give you my approach to Yonah, but I'll tell you. There is a moment coming right away when I'm going to make a comment about Yonah.
How do you like that?
He
must be communicating with me.
Absolutely. Watch it. We'll see right away. So I'll take you right there now. Vayashkim Avraham Baboker. Avraham got up in the morning. Rav Kook describes it so beautifully. It may sound a little strange in a translation into English, but he keeps referring to Avraham Avinu as Ha'av HaKadosh, the Holy Father. By the way, Avraham Avinu is Ha'av HaKadosh. And he says, everything in his life continued as normal. He didn't toss and turn in bed all night. I mean, often would we just love to have one good night's sleep? One good night's sleep. Have one of you slept well that night? Do you understand the circumstances? He has to take his one and only son. Tomorrow, he's going to go out to the arcade, and he sleeps well. I'm sure that he gets up in the morning and he says, "Mo down in the funeral. Chayyim, Kayim, Shevet, Zarta, Dini, Shlosi. I'm on the way. We're going." Yonah is full of great joy because he goes into a boat that is being tossed and turned, and he falls asleep. And not only does he fall asleep, it says, Vayerodam. Vayerodam means he fell into a deep sleep. Can you imagine anybody in a deep sleep? Pastor Shaw, person is on a plane, and it's going down. So don't wake me up. I'm fast asleep. Do you know who's able to be fast asleep under such circumstances? One who is absolutely certain that what he's doing is 100% correct. He has no doubts. He is so at peace with himself. Yonah is absolutely at peace with himself because he feels that his defiance of God now is the greatest thing he can do for Klal Yisrael. And that's who he cares about. He's not going to be used as one who will ultimately be a whipping boy for the Jewish people. No, sir, I'm not going to be part of that. He's at peace. What calm. It's unbelievable what calm. Avraham Avinu sleeps through the night. Gets up, normal time. Time he gets up all the time. And look at what he does. And I tell you, every time I read the account, I become more amazed. By Ashkenaz Avraham Avinu, and he says, look at every step that he takes. Every step that he takes means we're talking about somebody who has everything organized in his mind. There is absolutely no haste, no terror, no tension. He doesn't feel overwhelmed. By Yachavosh at Chamoro, on his own, he's the one that's going to saddle the body. He has to make sure that it's properly saddled. And he's going to make his way all the way to that cave of Yachavosh at Chamoro. He knows that in order to make his way, one of his Joshis describes the mountains and the hills, wild Canaanites out there, all sorts of animals. He needs people who are going to, he needs Ma'av Tachim with him. He takes Yishmael and Eliezer with him, by Yikachet Shnei Norbito, but Yitzchok Beno. And you know what's amazing? He chops wood. Why does he have to schlep wood from home? Why can't he expect that in Moriah he'll find all sorts of wood? He leaves nothing to chance. No, he wants to make sure that he's going to have good, proper wood. And he's going to cut it now so that it's all ready. By Yivakar Seola. By Yochum. And he gets up, and the Vayochum represents a man with determination. He's moving. And he went to the place that God told him. Every year I'm amazed by something else. You know what? He didn't have to go back to check if he locked the door. He didn't forget his cell phone in the house. I know sometimes I go crazy. To make sure that I have everything with me, we forget, we go back. Avraham Avinu leaves the house and he has everything he needs with him. Everything has been prepared for the journey. And when the Pasuk says, Vayelech el hamakom, he went to the place Asher Omar lo ha'elokim, that God said to him, that's a very exceptional Pasuk. What it means is that he is focusing now on only one thing. He's not thinking about Yitzchak now. He's not thinking about the terrible test that he's going to have to undergo. He knows that there's step one. He has to get to the place He has removed everything else from his mind and everything else from his consideration. There's only one thing. I've got to get there. Because nothing is going to happen unless and until I get there. It means moving all sorts of things out of one's mind, to the back of one's mind. That's very, very difficult. Remember, what the Rav is trying to tell us is that every detail and every aspect of this mitzvah is going to be fulfilled to absolute perfection. Nothing is left to chance. One of the significant aspects of the mitzvah is that it should be done with beauty. Zekeli v'anveyu, this is my God, and I will glorify him. The pasuk in the Nes Yosha, from which we learn the mitzvah, you should do mitzvahs beautifully before him. I say, let's one of make talis noe, tzitzis noe, suke noe, sefer Torah noe. Everything you should do should be beautiful. Cookie makes a statement that I had a great deal of personal joy. Because I once asked, says Zekeli v'anveyu, from which you learn the halacha of Hidur mitzvah, that you have to beautify the mitzvah. It has to be done with majesty, legally. There's another opinion in the Gemara Masechet Shabbat. Thank you very much. Doctor's wife gives me water, and So the Abishol in the Gemara says, do you know what the mitzvah of Zekeli v'anveyu is? This is my God and I shall glorify him. The mitzvah is Mahu, just as God is merciful, so you should be merciful. Just as God is kind, so you should be kind. You should be kind. Man is supposed to follow in the footsteps of God, be like him. So I want to ask the following question. Abba Shaul doesn't hold that you have to have a beautiful esrog, a beautiful mezuzah, a beautiful sukkah, a beautiful sefer Torah. I'm coming through all of the many things that I said earlier, but I believe that Abba Shaul is saying the following. There are two components that make up every mitzvah. If I'm to use the brisker terminology, always used by the Rav, there is the gavra, the person who performs the mitzvah, and then there's the chetzah, the object of the mitzvah. Say the man and his lulav and esrog, or the woman and her adlakat nedar, whichever mitzvah you want. Abba Shaul says a truly beautiful mitzvah is a mitzvah in which both components are beautiful. Our mafioso Gareth is going to walk into shul circus in the morning with a lulav and an esrog that everybody's eyes are going to be popping out. You understand? The most beautiful esrog in the world. Do you think that that's a beautiful mitzvah? How many people did he rob in order to buy that esrog? The beauty, the true beauty of a mitzvah is a beautiful person who's performing a beautiful mitzvah. The Rav says that about Avraham Avinu. Avraham of Cook says, you know, when I say the Rav, we got to straighten them out over here because I'm moving between Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Cook. Rav Cook says, here is a beautiful Avraham who is performing a beautiful mitzvah. And of all things, there is a direct relationship between the Akedah and Zekeli v'Anveihu, because the Medrash says in the merit that Avraham, Vayivaka Atzei Ola. What did he do? He cut, not only did he chop the wood, but then he split the wood into pieces so that it can be put directly onto the altar. The Medrash says in the schut of Vayivaka Atzei Ola, God both bokeya dinyamsuch boklad yisov. The Red Sea split. And was probably split beautifully, as Chazal say, it wasn't simply crossing the Red Sea knee deep in mud. It was a beautiful crossing. Just as Abraham had beautifully chopped up each one of those pieces of wood to have them ready. He could have done it later, could have done it at the last minute. You understand how much extra baggage he has to take with himself. But Avraham Avinu is preparing himself very calm. He's very collected. Everything is very thought out. This is not an act of passion that takes place in one single instant of time. This is something in which he is able to bring together all of his faculties in order to perform. And he knows exactly what he has to do. He knows exactly what he has to do. Something awesome and terrible. But no, it's Tzivui Hashem. Now, I'm not sure why I have this Xerox page here, but I'm just going to take 1 minute to read a Xerox page. I'm sorry. It's a letter. Forgive me, it's a letter that was written by Professor Alvin Napkowski to the Jerusalem Post on December 8, 1973. This is Napkowski's here. But I happened to read it, and it struck me, and I thought it would fit in very well with the show. I didn't have a clue what it did today. I thought you had abandoned us. No, you wouldn't do that. He's responding to a letter by a Dr. Ernest Linz, who had written, he believes God is not so petty as to refuse to accept the prayer because it is said 15 minutes too early in the morning. A sentiment, Professor Rakowski writes, that a sentiment so grossly superficial and banal demands some comment. Every scientist knows of innumerable effects, apparently insignificant, which produce results of major magnitude. Thus, a single crystal can cause the precipitation of an entire supersaturated solution. You think I know a word I'm talking about? But it certainly seems that a single crystal can pack a major wallet. The next one I understand already a little better. A microscopic amount of plutonium, could be arranged to detonate a nuclear explosion which could destroy a great city or even the entire world. Would Dr. Linz accuse nature of being petty? Ah. Everything is weighed and measured. Mitzvahs are not petty. Mitzvahs have to be performed kima'amoro, as God expressed them. The classic example of a mitzvah that is being performed, kimamoro is here, it goes on to say, or following Dr. Linz's reasoning, is God being petty to be concerned with the fate of the Jewish people? After all, an almost insignificant fraction of the world's population. Right. Of course, the poor fellow, Dr. Linz, didn't know. Lo meiduvchem mikol ha'am. It's not because you're the greatest of nations. Ki atem ha'ma'at mikol ha'am. You're the smallest, but I still love you anyway. In the relationship between finite man and infinite God, it is axiomatic that man cannot benefit God in the usual sense. Thus, any religious observance can only be meaningful in the context of being ordained by God and must so be carried out. Mitzvah means that this is the command of God. Now, the only way to fulfill it is the way he wanted it. Mitzvah, that's what Kook is talking about over the Akedah. Mitzvah kemamora, as it was said by God. Thus, Professor Rakowski goes on to say, unleavened bread must be non Passover. Fasting must be performed on Yom Kippur or other fast days. Outside of these times, the act of eating matzah or fasting would have no religious significance. That's nature, and that's God. A mitzvah is kamamara. Similarly, we pray because we believe that God desires our prayers. But we must use the words and keep to the time limits which he has indicated. That's the divine law. Avraham Avinu is fulfilling a mitzvah kima'amorah. And in the fulfillment of this mitzvah, he's going to make sure that it's going to contain all of the components that make up a mitzvah to perfection. It's going to be done with simcha, with great joy, because simcha is the hallmark of a mitzvah. It's going to be done with speed, with alacrity, not with haste. Not with haste, oh no. They say of Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Radichin, a great story. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Radichin said, Torah tells us that the Aaron HaKohen lit the menorah, poured the oil into the menorah, he lit the menorah every day, and it says, by Ya'as came Aaron, Aaron did so. And Rashi says, Melane, this comes to teach us Shalom Shina, that he didn't change anything from of the command as it was commanded. So all the first, what do you mean? So we're patting Aaron and HaKohen on the back that he was told to light the menorah, he lights the menorah. Great, Shalom Shina, he didn't change. So Rabbi Yitzchak Radichin says, if I would have to perform the mitzvah of lighting the menorah, I'd be so shaking, I'd be full of such religious tension, I'd spill the oil, I'd knock over the menorah, and I'd burn down the whole mishkan. Avraham Avinu has everything is taken into consideration. He has already anticipated whatever he's going to need. He has the two people with him who are going to accompany him. He's going to make it El HaMakom. Right now, he has removed everything else. There's no other consideration. Nothing is going to happen until he gets El HaMakom, and that's where he gets to. He must put into the back of his mind the fact that there's a frightening act that he's going to have to commit there. Something that flies in the face of his personality, or for that matter, the personality of any human being we thought in the world. Any human being. We find out now that it is possible for people to send their children, you understand, to be blown up and to blow others up. We're talking about Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu is the pillar of kindness in the world. Avraham Avinu is the one who goes out to war in order to save lives, to save people. That's his whole raison d'etre. He is the one who's going to bring goodness to the face of the earth. And here he continues. Bayom HaShlishi, on the third day, it's the third day. So you have to understand that in all of these 3 days, there must be, while he is in the state of joy, while he is doing everything with speed and he's doing it properly, he has the right that there should be a struggle going on within him. I've always seen the struggle as I imagine the following conversation taking place between the Satan, the Yetzer Hara, and Avraham Avinu. Avraham, you really plan to carry out God's word? Don't you know, didn't God tell you that Yitzchak is going to be your seed for all time? I mean, that was a promise. I think you have to collect on the promise. You can't do that. Avraham Avinu says, listen, it's not for me to question why. My responsibility is to carry out the word of God. So then, I can imagine the Satan saying, Avraham, do you understand what's happening over here? You know what's hanging in the balance? What's hanging in the balance right now is the future of the Jewish people. Isn't it possible that it may very well be worthwhile to do a little Avera, but for what purpose? Can there be a greater purpose than the preservation of all Klal Yisrael? So you do a little Avera. Maybe that will be an even greater sacrifice. Avraham Avinu is going to do a little Avera in order to save Klal Yisrael. That sounds pretty good. You know? Maybe we have to water down Torah a little bit in order that we should be able to save the masses of Jewish people. I mean, there were those who said that at the turn of the last century, the first half of the last century, just make Judaism a little bit, you know, okay, you can do this, you can do that, but the purpose. services to save Klal Yisrael. I can imagine Avraham Avinu saying to the Sultan, Sultan, do you know what it will mean? If I deny my God and I don't perform this mitzvah, then the very existence of my children through all generations will cry out to the heavens, we exist only because Avraham denied his God. That kind of generation, those kind of generations, I'm not interested in. I don't want that my children should live because I rejected the word of God. But there's a great deal going on. I've gone with him last 3 days. 3 days going over hills and dales, moving toward the Arkada. But more than anything else, what's taking place in Avraham is he's beginning to develop a sense of Dveikut. He feels the only thing that's going to take him through this is that he's becoming, in a sense, nearly one with God. He's becoming more and more pious, more closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Vayisa Avraham as Eino. Avraham lifted up his eyes and he saw the place from afar. And here comes, now back to our salvation. Our salvation says that over here what's going to happen is one of the additional great difficulties that Avraham Avinu encounters. And that is by Yom Avraham al Ma'orav, Avraham said to those who were accompanied him, Shulachem po machamor, you stay here with the donkey, Vani v'amar nail ha'ko, I and the boy, I'm going to go till they're finished, Tachavev, we'll bow down, then Hashuva Aleichem, and we will return to you. So the Rav describes this pasuk as expressing the eternal Jewish condition. That we can work together with all of the good people on the face of this earth up until a certain point. There's one area of our psyche that they will never understand, and that is our devotion to the Rebbeinu. And at that point, we part company. It's difficult for our phone. Here are people with whom he has traveled for many years together. They've become very close. But he knows that from this point on further, they will never understand him. They will never be able to relate to him. And therefore, Avraham has to take the very painful step of saying, here we separate. Here we part company. And this is something that the Jew has had to do throughout all of history. The Jews are shining of Torah and Mitzvahs. I will work with you. Anything you want to do. Anything that's for the good of Klal Yisrael. But there's a point. And that point is where whatever it is that you want me to do conflicts with my relationship to my Rebbeinu Shel'Olam, that's all balance. There we part. Ani v'anan elcha ko, I and the boy are going to go further because you're not going to be able to, you will never be able to understand what's going to take place there. What he describes in this pasuk is the loneliness of the Jew, the eternal loneliness of the Jew, the even greater eternal loneliness of the Jew who's a shamer terror mitzvahs. And I tell you, regardless of all the so-called great of the world who visited us this week, regardless of all of the adoration and adulation and admiration, we still remain a very, very lonely people. It doesn't mean a thing is completely external. There's nothing internal about it. The Jew is separate and distinct. Finish quickly. By the way, I never finish the Akeda. Never finish the Akeda. Vayikach Avraham et Hatzei Ha'olah. And you just have to watch how he's doing it. This is not mechanical. This is completely devotion. Vayikach Avraham et Hatzei Ha'olah v'yosam on Yitzchak Beno. He puts it on Yitzchak Beno. Why does it have to call Yitzchak Beno? He knows who exactly. Post-Pasuk wants to point out he knows exactly what he's doing. This is not just some Yitzchak from the street. Street is the Yitzchak Beno. But he got the other with the Eish, with the Markelet in his hand. He had everything prepared, by the way. He had the Eish. He had the machela. We didn't have to be told that, but you should know. He took a knife with him when he left the house. He had everything ready. Everything was ready. And they went together. Yitzchok said to Avram Avin, Vayomer Avin. You see the relationship? The relationship Ben of. We're not talking about somebody who has convinced himself to be cruel to this other who is there. It's a father and a son. Vayomer, he said, Avin, Vayomer, Hineni Bini, here I am. What beautiful two words, Vayomer. Behold, we have the fire, we have the wood, where is the seh? By Yomer Avram, Avram said, El Kim Yidolo, Haseh, La'ola, Vini, Vayechim, Shneim, Yachtov, they went together. All right, we'll just have to end here, but with one final point. We talked about the Simcha, the Zvizot, the Gidur, the Dveikot, and then the Veshit, the Akharit. All of that devotion that Avraham Avinu develops until the moment of the Akedah is not going to go to waste. The ram, after he's told to stop and desist, he takes all of that great devotion that he made to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he slaughters the ram as though it would have been his son. All of that devotion is not simply dissipated and lost and becomes nothing. It becomes a basic and integral part of the Jewish personality, Adonai Zeh. And the Akedah is that which has been, as I said at the beginning, this is a central theme in all of our tefillos. Olecha ho'ragru kol hayom. And what we're going to say this Rosh Hashanah to the religion, start now, that die. The religion has to say enough. Enough to the stars of Klal Yisrael. We should all have a seat of the Chassidim.